episode thing of the podcast that
has a name of something. I think it might be. I want to say 105.
Oh, come on, we can't guess something. This.
No, because we may change the order. We're doing. We're
so
doing
who knows?
Couple.
Which is part of why I'm going through it.
It's episode something.
Episode X, where X equals.
Yeah.
The podcast number. I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jennifer Masters. Hello.
And this is Movie Banter.
It is.
Where we banter about films. We've been doing it for over 100 episodes now, so you should have got the idea, frankly.
Go back and listen to them again.
But if this is your first time listening, welcome. And we talk about films.
That's what we do.
While occasionally going off on tangents.
It's an interactive show. Email us and things, and then we'll talk about your stuff.
Very true.
Podcast at moviebanter.co.uk.
Yes. Or we tweet us at Movie Banter. Yes. Or facebook.com/moviebanter.
Indeed.
Slash.
Stop it.
It's going to be a childish episode, isn't it?
Oh, dear.
What do we talk about this week?
Well, we need to talk about Kevin.
We need to talk about Kevin. Yes. We also need to talk about...
We need to talk about Kevin, Paul.
Do we?
Kevin, Paul. No,
who's Kevin? What?
I don't know, what?
I'll no, come
I've,
in again.
I've lost it, okay. Yes. Also, Warrior.
We need to talk about Warrior.
We do need to talk about Warrior. Jen may get quite excited during that bit.
We need to talk about Tom Hardy.
Yeah. We also need to talk about 30 minutes or less for vastly less than...
Please.
We could just do that now.
So we need to talk for about 30 minutes or less about... And 30 minutes or less, and Kevin.
Yes. And also Midnight in Paris, as it may well be by the time we finish.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But you can get to in 30 minutes or less if you're within half an hour from Paris.
yeah. Well, goes, I wouldn't start from here. But yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Good. Wow, what a combo. Yeah.
Well,
what an episode it's been. Have a good week.
Bye. So I don't know what you want to start.
Oh, any of those. No. Let's do Kevin in a minute because we need to build up to that. Okay. It's going to be.
Well, should we get 30 minutes or less out of the way quite quickly?
Okay, let's do that. Let's slag off a film.
Yeah, Jen and I can rant about it, and then we'll lower the tone.
I haven't got the energy or time to rant about this film. I think I made the point.
We'll reward you with Warrior after that.
Get you through
the end of it.
Okay.
Bear in mind, before we started recording, Jen said she hadn't even seen this film. And I had to remind her about it. She'd purged it from her mind.
And I remembered which film it was, and I said, oh, is that the one where I looked around and said, is this a comedy?
Yes. And it's not.
Has it got 30 jokes or less?
Far less. I think I may have laughed twice.
Okay.
Possibly twice.
Yeah, I think there was actually a distinct moment of going, oh, I'm laughing.
Is that, there was a definite gag in it.
What was that noise
right now? I know. I've surprised myself. Like a dog farting.
It was just really rubbish. I don't know whether it's just a sense of humour difference. I really don't know.
No, it was... It's exactly the same feeling I had with the other guys, which was Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, which is they all sort of thought they are quite funny people. They are people capable of great comedy, maybe not Mark Wahlberg, but generally capable of comedy. But it just doesn't ignite.
The trailer didn't really work for me. I didn't laugh particularly at the trailer.
The thing is, even the premise is very dark. And also actually happened with a far less. Oh, yes, it's a real thing. So it's not really the premise of a comedy, but you could make it work.
So this happened, and then a writer thought, you know what would be hilarious?
I know, but they denied it's based on a real thing, but this did actually happen. Which is that in the context of the film, pizza delivery guy gets kidnapped by two idiots and forced to rob a bank, or else they strap a bomb to his chest, say, rob a bank, otherwise the bomb will go off and you'll die. And hilarity ensues, it really doesn't.
And they're trying to get money so they can buy a hitman.
Yeah, I mean, it's a convoluted thing anyway. One of the idiots' dad won the lottery, so won millions of dollars.
Right.
So they want to kill him, so then the son will get all the money.
Yes.
But they need to hire a hitman to kill him, and they need to steal the money to pay the hitman.
If they want money, if you want to rob a bank... You don't need all that stuff in the plot to...
Well, the reason why they want the money is because they want to... create a brothel with the front of a tanning shop, which seems to be where a lot of the comedy is meant
they
to be
keep, it's this sort of
right.
set
about
this idea
their
they keep coming
plan.
Back to. Because they're idiots, but they're too...
In
Tropic Thunder terms, you never go full retard. And they've kind of gone...
Right.
They're just too idiotic.
Is it Danny
care.
Someone or other who's been in Your Danny... Highness and... He's the guy they're pitching as the new Kevin James. And we didn't need an old Kevin James, let alone the new Kevin James.
Kevin James is still Kevin James.
Yeah.
But at least Kevin James is... Yeah, his main premise is he's fat and he falls over a lot. But
you talk about Kevin James?
A very different film. But he's kind of likable and he doesn't overplay it. Mm. Whereas this, I can't remember his name now. I may have to look it up.
It's Danny.
And it's just all a little bit
too
seedy. I mean, the fact that it's got this sort of sexual And I think also
Jesse Eisenberg is in it.
Martin Zuckerberg.
Oh, it's by and it's by the same director or writer or both who did Zombieland, which Jesse Eisenberg was also in.
Okay, well
but
that was good.
But it's nowhere near that standard. Yeah.
He was doing a sterling job in a big pile of poo. I mean, he was trying his best. But like, even his supporting actor, what was it? He was meant to be a stand-up comic.
I can't remember his name. Aziz Ansari.
He's the worst actor
He's in a sitcom in America called Parks and Recreation. He's actually quite good in that as just sort of a comic actor. But when he's meant to be having a normal emotional range, because in that show he's kind of a one-dimensional idiot. But in this, he's meant to have he's meant to be the mate, and he's a bit more great, and he can't do it.
He just. It makes me want to punch him.
Yeah, he was annoying in the trailer. He put me off seeing the film.
Yeah, but also
he's lost the money.
But Jesse Eisenberg, I mean, playing after The Social Network, he did that so brilliantly. And in Zombieland, he seems to be a normal, fairly clever guy in a weird situation.
That's right.
And in this, he's kind of he's meant to be
a really stupid person.
He's meant to be a stupid slacker who's
clever to be.
Yeah, he always comes across. Pretty clever.
Yeah. And he can't really play stupid. You don't believe he's stupid.
He's got so much going on behind the eyes, you cannot believe for a second that he's that gullible.
The Facebook thing's going to follow him round, because I saw the trailer, all I could think was, he created Facebook. You know, now he's a pizza guy, what's going on?
Yeah, he needs a better film to move forward to. And this was kind of a massive step back. And this was back a step behind Zombieland, and it was, wrong.
So don't bother.
There are
far funnier and or more enjoyable
films. If 30 minutes or less arrives, send it back without paying for it.
Yeah.
It's meant to be a pizza analogy.
Don't work.
Forget it. But already that joke was better than the film. So,
That is better than the rest of it. It's just...
Anyway. Actually, you've now given me a positive association with that film.
Well, there you go. There you go. Pizzas are nice, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's what I can think of.
So anyway, let's
You know what else is nice? Tom Hardy.
We've now lost Jen for a few moments.
You better review it rather than Jen could just make noises occasionally.
No, this is a really great film. I didn't think at all that I would like it. I thought, okay, I'll go along and see it, and I'll enjoy looking at Tom Hardy for a bit, even though he's a big guy in this. A bit too big.
He's always a big old guy.
But in Inception, he's sort of just quite normally actor build.
Yeah.
And in this, he's properly quite hulking and a bit frightening.
I saw a photo the other day of the new Superman.
Who
is...
Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill, yes.
Or Cavill.
Who I saw in The Tudors. And in The Tudors, he looked normal, you know, in good shape, but normal. Mm. And you see the Superman thing, and the article next to it sort of says, and the quote sounds quite desperate, him sort of go, well, I've been working out like 5 to 10 hours a day, and I'm on a diet where I can only eat meat.
Egg.
And,
I'm eating chicken constantly.
And the photo of him, he looks, like he's bulked up phenomenally.
Well, he's become sort of your typical triangle.
Yeah, he looks like a triangle.
Yeah.
And it does look impressive. But just the quotes, and you can just see behind the eyes, he's kind of going, help! I can't move my arms!
I've been given millions of dollars to turn myself into a freak.
I keep falling over.
Because he's also in Immortals, which I think is out soon-ish. Okay. Which is a heavily stylized Greek myth film. And in that, he's very, very lean, but not enormous. Right. And he seems to be jumping about with no shirt on. And he's kind of not quite a stick with... I mean, but he's... Mm. Yeah, so even from that to Superman is quite a hefty leap.
Yeah.
So
it sounds like it's a bit more of a traditional Superman, like comic book.
Yeah. I'd have thought with CGI and all that nowadays, you wouldn't need all that bulky up stuff. Use that machine they've got in the Captain America.
I know, just...
Yeah. No, that got destroyed in the explosion.
Oh, of course it did.
Yeah. Curse you.
The little Chris can make a big Henry, that's what I was thinking.
No.
Anyway, back to Big Tom.
Back to Warrior. But I thought, I'm going to give it, because obviously you'll go into more detail, I thought that it was absolutely great film. Remarkably emotionally engaging. I cried a couple of times. Just going, silly boys, just talk to each other. It was a fantastic film. Absolutely amazing fight sequences. Completely believable. Obviously very cleverly edited. But a really great film about family relationships, about two brothers, and about a need to do the right thing and how history can affect you again. It's just a really great film.
It affected me more. It's very similar in a lot of ways to The Fighter, but affected me a lot more than The Fighter. And I think because it's, I mean, this will probably maybe be bypassed a bit come award season. Whereas The Fighter seemed like it was going a little bit, hey, look at us for Oscars. And Warrior doesn't quite, but I think it was more effective.
It's been talked about in Oscar terms. With the actors. Although the problem being that it's out a bit early for Oscar season.
Yes.
And also I think the problem being that The Fighter was out last year and actually they've made it another year.
And also
year
it's based on a true story.
Because this one isn't a true story.
Yeah, this is just a fictional thing. Yeah. And about mixed martial arts, which I think is slightly less respected maybe than boxing. Yeah. But it's still very real and very brutal.
Well, a lot of reviewers pointed out that because it's a fictitious story and it's not a book already or anything like that, is that normally with a boxing film, you know who's going to win.
Yes.
And this one you don't.
Because, yes.
No.
You have no idea where it's going
to
go.
Right down to the last, you have no idea. It could literally go either way.
And also, you kind of want it to go both ways, which sounds dodgy. But as in, both brothers have very valid reasons for fighting. They have reasons why they are sort of willing to fight each other, which isn't really giving anything away. Of course, it comes down to a fight between the two of them. Otherwise, it would be a boring film.
Yeah.
But you're not there thinking, oh, he's the evil brother and he's the good brother. Mm. That you can see why they're both fighting and why you kind of want them both to win. But, you know, it can't work like that.
Which is particularly why it's a great story. It doesn't rely on those quick cliches. I mean, obviously the fact that you're saying it's not based on a book or a true event, I mean, doesn't that in some ways make it harder to create a good film that hasn't got that history to it? Yeah. I mean, there are obviously some things that are perhaps a little bit pop in some respects, like one of the histories regarding, I don't know whether I should say this or not, whether the fact that he's got a troubled past and he's left a career behind and how that plays out. You know, why he perhaps, because obviously he's a bit brooding, very strong, silent type. But the fact that he comes out as to why he's like this, and it obviously gives him more validity, even quite close to the end, where you're thinking, oh, you know, which one am I going to prefer? And then, you know, in your head, you're going, I want him to win.
Yes.
And then it just makes it so much more complex that it's thoroughly engaging.
Mm. And also, I mean, Jen's hormones aside, we shouldn't leave out Joel Edgerton. Whose name I had to look.
Is that the brother?
Yes, who's the other brother. Who I realised was in the Star Wars prequels as a young Uncle Owen.
Okay.
Who has hardly anything to do, but he's in that. And and again, it's sort of tripled in size since
then. Yes,
I
imagine.
But it's more his film than Tom Hardy's film, I think. He definitely speaks more, and we see more of his side of it. I mean, Tom Hardy is sort of an ex-Marine. That's sort of his side, sort of come back to town. And Joel Edgerton is a teacher who used to be a fighter and then sort of gave it up and started teaching, but has serious financial problems and just isn't willing to declare bankruptcy and sort of quit. He doesn't want to give up on things. Mm. And Nick Nolte is their father, and there's a lot of family tension there for various reasons. And that also sort of hinges on why the brothers are at odds, but not massively. It's not like one massively offended the other, but it's just events transpired such that they are not comfortable with each other. But it is. For a film which involves two enormous men, well, several enormous men, beating each other up, it's very, very moving.
Yeah.
It would be very easy to put in sort of big plot developments that don't quite belong, but sort of rapidly tick things along. And there aren't any of those. I still kept expecting, someone's going to try and sabotage someone else, there'll be underhanded dealing. And it's not. It just all plays out.
Yeah.
Normally, but in a very refreshing way as a result. It's very watchable.
Thoroughly recommend it.
I think
we've pretty much done that. Yeah, good to see it.
Yes, I would like to,
essentially.
In fact, I only didn't because I just saw the poster and thought it's another one of those films.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it looks like...
But actually, I've since heard it's actually better than one of those.
I mean, you could easily... There's a film called Never Back Down or something.
Yeah.
It had some, you know, wannabe boy band-esque young actor type. Which is, boy on the wrong side of tracks and gets into fighting. It's an appalling film. And on the surface, it looks like it could be that. Except the slightly better cast, implies there might be more to it. But yeah, it's far more involved.
The only reason I was going to before I heard reviews anyway was Tom Hardy.
Yes.
He's very good.
Yeah.
And when I originally saw the poster, I thought it's probably Danny Dyer or something like that. but Tom Hardy, he's Bond in waiting, you know?
Ooh.
He's got too many tattoos.
That they can cover them up.
Well, yeah. It'd be nice.
Although, is he that much younger than Daniel Craig?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, no, definitely he is. He is. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I think Tom Hardy would do pretty well in most things, to be honest. Yeah. And I'm not just saying that because he's got a pretty face. Even though he has got... Yes.
So anyway. On the future Bond, the future Bourne, the future Sherlock Holmes, the future Stephen
Hawking.
He is
the future.
Mr. Masters.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Also, I think this is vaguely connected. I should mention there's a trailer out, which I saw. I can't remember the name of the film, but no doubt it's seared into James' consciousness. This Means War.
Yes.
Right. Does it? I was reading up on film news, as I often do. Yeah. And a trailer popped up, essentially, with someone saying, oh, this looks a bit crap. And I thought, it does a bit, but I know someone who really want to see this film. And the premise is, I've never before seen a film which has so clearly been... It's like someone has uninceptioned Jen's brain.
Right.
Some studio executive crept into Jen's house while she slept, pulled this idea out of her brain.
Okay.
And then, rather unfairly, cast Reese Witherspoon in the role of her.
Oh no, how rude.
I know.
The premise is Chris Pine and Tom Hardy.
I was about to say. Yeah. Is it Chris Pine and Tom Hardy?
Chris Pine and Tom Hardy play spies. Very good looking, in shape, rough and tumble spies. Who are both very good friends.
Yes.
And both have been dating someone. And they say, oh, show me a picture. Turns out they're both dating Reese Witherspoon.
No way!
Yeah. I know.
No way!
Absolutely.
And they essentially decide. Oh, I think she knows this. She knows this as well. It's all very early stages, just happen to be seeing each other. And so they decide to just let the best man win. But, of course, end up screwing each other over in order to win the affections of Jennifer Masters. I mean, Reese Witherspoon. And I immediately sent Jen this and saying, I think you might want to see this.
Yes.
And apparently she, nearly collapsed.
It's just shame that it's Reese Witherspoon, not Gemma Arterton. That would have been quite a wonderful thing.
That would have been quite
magical.
That would have been the most fantastic thing.
Oh, I think I probably would have imploded. I think that was...
No, but then they can say that for the flip version, where you and I play rival podcasters fighting for the affections of Gemma Arterton. That wouldn't be as good a film.
I
wouldn't go and see
that. The studios wouldn't quite buy that one.
I don't think so.
We need to work on that pitch, don't we?
Yeah.
I said pitch.
Anyway.
We need to talk about another film.
Exactly.
Which one? What should we go for?
Something involving Kevin.
We need to talk about Kevin and Perry Go Large. Except without the and Perry Go Large bit. I'm getting all the jokes out of the way now, because trust me, when you talk about the film, there's no jokes there.
Oh, okay.
Are you aware of this film? Are you aware of the book? Are you aware of the idea?
I haven't read it.
Not too much, actually.
Well, there is a book by an author called Lionel Shriver, who is female, even though she's called Lionel.
Leave's sister?
No, Shriver.
Oh, is it Maria's sister?
Maria Sharapova.
No, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger's wife.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, yes. In which case, probably.
Okay.
It's a book that did very well a few years ago, and unusually did very well critically, lots of awards and things, and also commercially, and people bought it. But it is, it's a tough read, in that it's about a mother trying to reconcile her life pre and post a tragedy that has in some way happened that involves her son.
Right.
And it's the mother clearly trying to sort of make amends. And it's about her relationship with her son. And I don't want to go into those who haven't seen the film or read the book or know the idea behind it. We're not really told clearly in the film for some time what the tragedy. Mm. We just know there is one.
Because I think in reviews, they're sort of just giving it away.
A lot aren't they?
So
assuming we've read the book. But then
I think
a lot haven't. So it is being quite sort of liberal. But in the film, I think if the film had dealt with it up front and said, it's about this, then I'd be saying it as well. But it's the fact they leave that until later on, I think it's probably best left. But so it's really just about something about, there's something wrong with this kid. Mm. It's a bit like, you remember the in the 80s there were the film, the Problem Child films, about just an annoying child who would go around just basically a sociopath.
Right.
And in the 80s it was played for laughs, and this child is a sociopath, really. He's from an early age. Even the fact was as a father of a one-year-old, I sort of could relate to one point in it where she's walking down the street with a pram, and there's this crying baby. He just won't stop crying, and she even pulls in next to some roadworks where they're drilling the road, deafeningly loud. so that for a brief moment she can't hear the baby's cries. It's still going on,
right?
But she's going, ah, oh, lovely. I can just hear this, and that's it. So, yeah, problem child from the word go, and we just see snapshots of this child growing up throughout the film. But there's no linear chronology. It's all over the place. So sometimes we see older kid, younger kid, and Tilda Swinton as the mum trying to sort of deal with all this,
right?
And I think there's one laugh in it that they've put one little jokette, which we all laugh at because we go, thank the Lord, some relief. We need something, because it is relentless, and it's I mean, it's not like a sort of a Saw movie relentless where it's non-stop gore or anything,
yeah,
but there's a non-stop uneasy, queasy, unsettling atmosphere throughout it, which just makes it very, very hard, I think, to watch. A lot of people have said it's their film of the year. A lot of reviewers have said, you know, this is the film of the year.
Really?
I probably wouldn't necessarily say that, just because it's very well done. It's probably the best film that could be made from that book.
Right.
But it's not a book that I intend to read, and it's not a film I intend to revisit.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it's just very hard.
Right.
So,
worthy?
Maybe. I think the other problem is I was watching it thinking, a bit like with Warrior, it sounds like a real story.
Hmm.
And it's not, it's fiction. And I was watching the film thinking, this must be about a real event. This must have happened. And it's not. It's all fiction. And so as a result, I was...
Although, I mean, there are probably many parallels.
There's a way. There's certainly very similar events, which it could be about. But the fact that I felt a little bit cheated, I think, the fact that throughout I thought, well, I'm seeing this quite insightful thing about behind this big event, and actually it's a fictitious event. So, but go in with that in mind, and you might get something more out of it than I did. But it's very well done. I think it's a little heavy-handed that Tilda Swinton, throughout the film, like the colour red is being used. A lot of reviewers have been saying, oh, the colour red is very vividly used throughout the film. But it's a little heavy-handed that the film starts with her sloshing around in tomatoes at this big festival in Spain where people slosh around in tomatoes.
Oh, yes.
And then, you know, getting covered in red paint at various times. And it's all a little bit like blood. There's blood everywhere, blood. There may be something later on with blood and tragedy and blood and things. It's coming, there's blood coming, there's tragedy coming. And I think you could probably have done without tin tomatoes to sell that. But
wow,
so there you go. We don't need to talk about Kevin anymore.
Okay. Well, may wait for that one.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But it does sound, interesting, but difficult.
Yeah, it's well worth, if that idea takes you and you think, yeah, I've always wanted to read the book, then watch the film. It's quicker. I think it is done very well. I know some people will listen to this and think, no, it's a much better film than that. And it is. It's a very good film. It is very, very well done. But it is unrelenting.
Yeah, so, just don't go along expecting wacky family drama.
Exactly. No. It's not Problem Child 5, even though it kind of is.
Right.
Although, but they are comedies, and this is...
They are definitely comedies. Yeah. This one definitely isn't. Yes.
Last but not least, although Jen and I may disagree on this one, is Midnight in Paris, which is Woody Allen's latest film, and I think most commercially successful ever.
Really?
I think so. Yeah. I think it's earned an absolute fortune in the box office. More than his films normally do.
Wow.
It's definitely more... possibly more accessible to many people, so that might be why it's more popular, but...
Yeah. Well, the basic premise
I'm guessing John likes it, Jen doesn't.
I'm just slightly it just wasn't quite right.
I was in a mood for... See, actually, I recommended it to another friend of ours who said, oh, what should you go and see? And I think it was relatively slim pickings, but she needed kind of a date-ish movie. And I said, well, if you want a date-type movie, this is definitely the one to go for over...
When you're talking
it
about
may
Kevin.
Have been Warrior was the other one, actually.
I was definitely going to go and see
whatever the other one was, I think was good, but said for a date film.
Not date,
this.
Yes.
And she hated it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think actually she hates it more than you did, Jen.
Yeah, she did. It's just... It plays around with sort of reality too much. And I know it's a film, obviously, and you can do whatever you want. But when it tries... You know how some films are just incredibly smug?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. This is definitely smug film.
See, I really didn't get that. It may be I was in a mood for whimsy. I thought it was whimsical rather than smug. It was, although the premise is Owen Wilson and Rachel McAdams go to Paris to, he's taking a break, or trying to write a novel, and she, I think, it's her father's own business, they're sort of tagging along.
And they're engaged.
Yes, they're engaged, and it's clearly not quite right between them, but they're sort of, it's going along. And then midnight, he goes for a walk by himself. She goes off with another friend of hers. And he's sitting on some steps as bell chimes midnight, and an old car pulls up. And someone sort of leans out and says, hey, get in, don't worry, we're going somewhere cool, pretty much.
In the 1920s.
Well, sort of just looking... yes, the car era. And he gets in, they drive off, and he suddenly finds himself in Paris in the 20s.
And that car goes at 88 miles per hour
down
the Champs-Élysées.
No, there's no flashlight. He just sort of pulls off a bar, and suddenly, whoa.
Realising that he's talking to these amazing... Because he's a writer, you see, and he has this great longing. He's been in Paris before, he's come back, and he's there waxing lyrical about how beautiful it is. And you do, in the opening credits, you see all these wonderful scenes. And if you've ever been to Paris or, you know, or paid attention to anything to do with Paris, you'll go, ah, that's that, oh, it's lovely. And yes, you get quite excited. You're going, oh, this is going to be a really great trip. This is going to be a really lovely bit of Parisian lifestyle, fantastic. And then... It is, in many levels, except for the fact that apparently the only people in Paris in the 20s are famous people.
Well, it was. Everyone was famous.
Absolutely. No, but he's not wandering the streets in Paris. He's going to, you know, niche bars, which he gets taken along to by, you know, one famous person. Mm. And he ends up meeting, you know, like, F. Scott Fitzgerald and... Ernest Hemingway and many other people whose names I half recognise. Yes.
And you do feel smug because you go, oh, that's going to be that's going to be Dolly. Oh, it's Dolly. It is Dolly.
Of course
Dolly.
It is.
Okay, yes. Oh, it's Dolly. Yeah. Hello, Dolly.
Hello, Dolly. Hello, Dolly.
And so it's just, and that is fine because you're there going, okay, there's this character. He's engaged to someone. He's got a longing for the past. It's not quite working out. Is he actually just having a bit of a nervous breakdown? Mm. You're going, okay, that would be quite interesting. Yeah. Fair enough. No.
No, you see, but I think that would have annoyed me if he was having a nervous breakdown.
So this actually happens?
I mean, it's one or two other people go there as well. And he sort of takes things away with it and finds evidence of it.
Because it's playing around with the fact that, oh, no, come with me, I'll show you. And then for whatever reason, obviously, just at the right moment, like, she goes, no, I'm not coming. This is just your silly game. He walks off and he only ever manages to do it on his own.
So it's basically good night, sweetheart.
Yes.
Right.
But it doesn't make any claims to really being anything but that. It doesn't, because they don't explain the time travel. There's no logical reasoning for it. It just happens.
Yeah.
And I was sort of all right with that because it's that kind of film. Mm. And then he falls for someone in the 20s. And again, it's used as a slight jumping off point for envisaging a golden era, because to him, so in 2011, it's quite dull. Whereas the 20s, Paris, that was brilliant. Then he's talking to people who are in 20s in Paris and saying, no, it was all rubbish. You know, 50 years ago, that was the time to be.
Yeah, where all the impressionists were.
Mark Yarwood and...
So there are points that it tries to make. But it's... Yeah, I don't think it's not trying to be a particularly serious film. It's just trying to be, here is this story. And this guy learns about himself and realises his relationship isn't maybe right and might be with his other girl in the past, but then not really because other reasons. Yeah, so I just enjoyed it for that light reason.
Oh, is there a love interest in the past as well?
Yes.
So it is Goodnight Sweetheart. Woody Allen watched Goodnight Sweetheart and thought, I'll do that.
Yeah,
and then there's like a bit of a misunderstanding. Thing is, I don't know quite what was going on with the filming of this project, but there seemed to be a lot of really slightly under-rehearsed workshops sections with... weird pauses and actors looking at each other going, I'm sure it's your turn to sort of resolve this issue.
Yeah.
And just that rather had a sense of Amdram about it.
Well, he does make two films a year, doesn't he, Woody Allen? So he does, churn them out. So is anyone famous playing the famous people?
Generally. I didn't recognise Hemingway, but Salvador Dali is played by Adrian Brody.
Okay. Other people
who
are playing other people.
Who was the unsinkable Molly Brown in Titanic?
Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates, yes, is in it as well.
Mm.
Okay.
As some sort of Yoda person.
No.
Which could be the unsinkable Molly Brown.
As a famous American painter or writer.
I can't remember who it was, but it's obviously the way that she's presented is somebody who knows everything and says, maybe you should try and do this because I feel that may be good in the future.
It's Jessie Wikipedia. She was big back in
the 20s. Absolutely. Yeah. It's just, if these characters were presented any more of a cliche of themselves, for example, if it was Shakespeare, you go back and you see him with a skull and a quill through the eye socket.
I did hear someone say that Woody Allen's thing that he's been doing lately is, he's picking a city and making two or three films there and moving to a different one. And that when he was doing New York, he's from New York. And so the opening of Manhattan, for example, all these lovely, beautiful scenes of Manhattan, and he knows where to go to get different sides of Manhattan and go, and you really feel that's from someone who knows it. Whereas when he does it for his London films, and he shows Big Ben and the Tower of London and a man with a Busby hat and a bus.
Picks up a guy
and
it's,
and equally Paris, Eiffel Tower, Champs-Élysées. Yeah. It's kind of more like the French tourist board of rather than this is a lovingly homage thing to my city.
Wouldn't be too surprised if it was actually stock images.
Yeah.
He just
it's a bit on the nose. And it sounds like with the characters he's seeing, going, hi, I am Ernest Hemingway. Bit on, you know, it's all a little
which
bit.
Which is why I think that it would have a lot more credibility if it was this guy having a slight.
Because
if it was just all from his own.
Then, of course, he could.
Interpretation of it.
You can justify that it's a little bit one note. Because if he's got a one note brain.
Yeah.
It's not Woody Allen's fault, it's Owen Wilson's fault.
Absolutely. And I think Owen Wilson, he's a very likeable actor. And he's very likeable in this. And I'm not saying that this film is awful. In fact, it's kind of like a good start. It will get you thinking about. Obviously, culture of the time, and I did go off and I had a look at books I haven't looked at for a while, and so in that respect, it's great, but just not quite right.
It sounds a bit also like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, it may just be that I had slightly lower expectations, and so for it just being sort of, you know, a light touch through, you know, Paris and 20s and time travel and whimsical and stuff happens and nothing too awful unfolds and end. Mm. And I was quite all right with that.
Mm.
But, yes, if you feel there should be more to it, you're going to be quite disappointed.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But candy for the eyes. And,
fair enough. Good.
Yes. So we're thinking, best Woody Allen film.
Well, indeed. He's made a couple, hasn't he?
He's trotted out one or two.
Yeah. A year. So, plenty to go for. Shall I start the ball rolling?
Yes.
With, I think I'm just going to do the obvious one. I'm just going to go Annie Hall.
Well, yeah, you see, it's weird, because I like Annie Hall, but I only saw it the first time, a few years ago now, but years after I should have done.
Yes.
And I remember thinking the whole way through, it feels quite dated, even though so much in it was pioneering.
True. Yeah.
And it was lots of new stuff, which no one had done before, and a feel and other stuff.
But wonder, without that, if rom-coms would quite be the same thing as they are today.
It did lay the template for it. And having seen a lot of rom-coms, I just ended up thinking, oh, right, so it's this and this and this. And I know that's wrong, but it does it affected my, not enjoyment of it, but appreciation of it slightly.
I think scenes in it, like when they're in the cinema queue and they sort of step out of reality and there's the guy who wrote the book.
Yes.
And you just feel, wouldn't it be lovely if things like that could happen in reality?
Yeah.
And it's doing what film should do in a way, which is showing us, giving us moments like, chances like that to think, that would be great if that could happen. And doing all that in a rom-com, I think was brilliant, and which is why I think he hasn't surpassed it. And,
yes.
And yeah, he set the template, and after that he then sort of has done similar things.
Yeah.
As many directors.
But also sort of chai images and things.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
One film I really, really liked, and I can't really think why, beyond it, I just really enjoyed it, is Match Point.
I know two reasons why you liked it.
Well, quite possibly. But it's Scarlett Johansson, in case anyone's wondering.
Yeah.
But she does a very good job in it.
And the other fellow in it.
I'll see.
No. Just trying to backpedal from the fact that it was a little bit sexist.
No, I'm perfectly happy talking about Scarlett Johansson's boob. But no, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is also very good. But also because it's... And again, not implying there's a massive twist, but it doesn't go quite the way you expect. And as such, I really like it for that. I don't know if it's just watching lots of films and TV shows gets you quite attuned to narrative flow generally. So you're you normally expect things, even if you think, oh, there's a twist, you normally expect things, to go one or three ways. You think it's going to be this, this, or this. And if something just surprises you by going in an unusual way for a story to go, then I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
For the same way that, it's going to sound horrifically dark, but like if there's a... I shouldn't have said it. It's going to sound horrible, but it sort of explains my point. In a film, if there's a child, it's sort of an action film or something, and there's a child who gets killed, which is horrible, but it's very unusual for a film to do it. And so if that happens, it immediately sort of makes me slightly take notice and think, oh, okay, most audiences don't like that, so most people won't put that in a film. If you're putting that in a film, you're kind of going somewhere with this, and it just makes it slightly more interesting. And Match Point just goes an interesting way.
Okay.
Which I wasn't expecting. I liked it a lot.
I haven't seen obviously half as many as I probably should have done. But I am going to go for Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Another fine film.
Yes.
Yeah.
For all good reasons to see that.
Yeah.
And of course Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Five good reasons to see.
I know it's not Jeffrey Dean Morgan, but it basically is Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
You
could pretty much mix and match.
I know.
Javier
Bardem?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I challenge anyone to really tell them
I'm glad you said Javier Bardem, because I was about to go, Gabriel, Gael, Sabatini, Marquez.
No.
Oh, no, I don't need to know more names of actors.
Yes. In the unlikely event that anyone listening to this isn't film obsessive, but look up Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
And just mix up the photos and see if you can just, at a glance, pick out which one's which.
I know, I did think they were each other when I saw this film originally. Is that? No.
Is that? No. But it is, but it might as well be, because...
I really enjoyed it. Good film.
Yeah.
Very nice. Just really, kind of carries you along, doesn't it? Mm. You get swept up in it really easily.
Yeah, I think Rebecca Hall's amazing in it. And
yes.
And the music.
Yes. And the passion. And
Very good.
Yeah.
Good.
So,
there you go.
If you have Woody Allen thoughts or any other thoughts, then email us podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Very good.
Or tweet us.
Book the face.
Or Facebook us.
Indeed. Yep. Any of those
or
things.
Or carrier pigeon.
Indeed.
Or mail. No, I'm not giving out my address.
No, not mail.
Well, you're going to go in a minute, so we can give your address.
Yeah, we'll
give
your address. No, you never listen anyway. You won't know. No. You'll only know when the severed head start turning up on your doorstep.
Why would it be a severed head?
I don't know.
Why couldn't it be something nice?
You don't think a severed head's nice?
A non-severed head.
Just someone's... Hello!
Hello! All right, or a headless corpse.
Which do you want? Do you want the head or the corpse?
I know.
Got to pick or choose.
I'm flowers. I'll pick the flowers.
With heads or without heads? Just the stems. Bunch of dead stems.
That would be better than a headless corpse.
But not better than a severed head?
It's better than a severed head.
What you're saying is everything's better than a severed head.
Can we just stop saying severed heads?
We haven't mocked Jen for some time, and now we do it in the last 30 seconds of the episode.
No, we're just cramming it
we've waited too long.
With slightly worrying, ominous threats.
We'll try and do it next time.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And on that bombshell,
okay,
just to clarify, don't send anyone severed heads.
No, don't.
Just in case anyone's thinking, did they want a severed head?
Everyone just stop saying severed heads, please.
Anyway. But yes, get in touch via with nothing unpleasant via sensible means, and we will see you next time.
Till the next time, severed heads.
Hi.
Headless corpse.
That went a bit weird to me.
I know this is Halloween, but I don't know we did that last.